This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Bunker Podcast. My name is Father Ted, and Happy New Year, because I haven't been back since right before the Christmas break. And bringing it back to you in the new year, we have a very special guest today. His name is Professor Jason Figliano. I said it right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Also known as the jerk. I'm just joking. We'll get into that.
The jerk with the Hummer.
Yeah, yeah. For those who watched the bunker tournament, he was interviewed, and yeah, he had the Hummer that was like illegally parked outside.
Conveniently parked.
But yeah, so Professor Jason, you own a number of Gracie Humaitis, yeah?
Yes, I've got three locations. My original one in Bolton, mm-hmm. and then we opened up another one in Tottenham, just north of Highway 9. Mm-hmm. And then the most recent one is in the Mississauga area. It's my Mississauga location.
Okay.
I partnered up with another one up in the Alliston location.
But you don't have the Woodbridge one is not yours?
Nope, that's okay. My original professor, Dan Maroney.
Okay, nice, very nice. And I know who Dan is. Yeah, I don't know him personally, but everyone knows who he is.
Yes.
Right, and so you are, so tell us about yourself. Like, so where are you from? First of all,
okay, so yeah, I was born and raised downtown Toronto and then moved up to the Jane and Finch area. Mm. I've been doing martial arts since I was about 6 years old. I started in a school called Kingsbridge Martial Arts with a karate black belt, David Denov. He was a world champion at that point in, I can't remember the circuit, but it was a Piranha karate circuit. And we were doing, I want to say, the beginning grassroots of jiu-jitsu at that point. There was maybe one or two black belts at the point in Canada.
This is back in the 90s? When was this?
Ooh, let's see. I started when I was six, so 6 years plus 83 is 89, 90.
You're born in 83.
Yeah, I was born in 83.
There you go. All right.
So there you go. And I remember as like an 8-9-year-old watching Carlos Newton come in because he lived in the building where we did our karate training. And he would come in and put everybody in his guard. Mm-hmm. And he would just say, try and beat the crap out of me. And I would watch all guys taking wild punches on him. And he was getting ready for all his fights at the time. And he was training there, Samurai Club. Samurai Club was one of the original jiu-jitsu establishments from what I remember.
That was the OGs. Like, so Joel Gershon, where I was, used to be a Rev.
Right.
He was there with Carlos Newton, Terry Riggs, all those guys. That was the Samurai Club guys.
Exactly.
The OG jiu-jitsu guys. Before there was jiu-jitsu clubs.
Correct.
It was just judo, karate, MMA, but it wasn't like anything.
There was no set jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu club.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was, you call it haphazardly doing jiu-jitsu. And then I got into a little bit of trouble in high school, got expelled from the Toronto District Catholic School Board system.
Nice.
So my mother sat there and said, we need to get you out of Toronto. Ship this up to Barrie, where I hooked up with Trevor Lewis, who's a fourth degree now under Hoyler Gracie. He was a purple belt when I met him, and he was my black belt karate instructor. He gave me my karate black belt, and then I went up the ranks with him under Professor Danny until we joined something called the RGDA. Mm-hmm. The RGDA was the Hoyler Gracie David Adiva Association. Before Master Hoyler Gracie immigrated to the U.S., we had the association called the RGDA.
So that's how like the whole karate world and the jiu-jitsu world kind of partnered?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
Well, for our schools anyways, I would say. In the U.S., there aren't many schools that are dual style under Gracie Humaitis. There's probably about five or six that I know of. Here in Canada, it's me and Trevor that are dual. We have karate and Brazilian.
That's it, I think. The only other place that just started doing it now is NKS. So Northern Karate Schools.
Correct.
They've started, but they only have two fledgling programs, mm-hmm. one in Willowdale, and then there's one in Maple.
Right.
But they're starting to see the value of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're branching
absolutely.
Out. Yeah.
The two styles complement each other. Sure. Leaps and bounds. Yeah. Leaps and bounds. So
as far as your karate side, are you a Sheehan now?
So I am a sixth degree under Trevor Lewis and Hanshi Greg Tierney. He's a ninth degree black belt. Everybody knows him as one of the top point fighters of the time in kata. So I'm a Kyoshi.
You're a Kyoshi, yeah.
That was the title bestowed upon me with regards to the karate side of things. Nice. On the jiu-jitsu side, I'm a third degree black belt under Master Hoyler.
Nice. Beautiful. Yeah, I've met Master Hoyler twice in my life. He doesn't know me, but it was awesome.
You know what I love about Hoyler? Is when you see him and you meet him, you think you've known him your entire life.
Yeah, he's very personable.
Very rarely, and keep in mind, I've done seminars and brought in guys like GSP. Mm-hmm. We brought in Vanderlei Silva. We brought in some of the top names. For some reason, every time I compare seminars, Master Hoyler's seminar, it's like he is the hardest working person I know in the seminar world. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. he makes it a point. we were at a seminar in Missouri, and there was over 100 people on the mats. And the number one thing everybody said was they felt like they were with him all day because he hustles. He goes to every group, corrects every person, has laughs with every person. Like, just one of the one of the greatest human beings I've met in the jiu-jitsu world.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go to not the last one he did at Toronto BJJ, but two times ago because he's I was a blue belt at the time, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, you would have seen me there then.
Yeah, maybe I didn't know you though. I was there.
No, but yeah, and whenever Master Hoyler comes, I tend to be the one that kind of helps him.
Yeah, you were there. I remember you being there, but I didn't know you then. But I was there as a blue belt, and yeah, it was a great seminar. Like you feel like he's your. He's your professor.
Yeah.
You see him all the time, even though you've only met him once, right? So
yeah,
really, really nice guy. Okay, so you're under him. You said you're third degree
black belt.
Nice.
Done numerous point and full contact karate matches. I've done a couple of amateur MMA fights in the States. It's more fun in the States for some reason than it is here in Canada.
Yeah, there's not much happening here in Canada.
No, I mean, my very first MMA fight was under a lamppost at the Angry Bull Steakhouse in Port Huron, Michigan.
Okay.
And the lamppost served as our light, and it was just a wild ride. I showed up for that fight, and the promoter goes, "Who do you want to fight?" And I said, "Well, who do you got?" And he gave me three options. I said, "Who's the most skilled?" Because I was a brown belt at the time.
Yeah.
And he said, "This guy here, he's got 16 amateur fights, blah, blah, blah." I said, "Okay, let's fight."
So did they have a ring?
Like, it was a cage under a lamppost.
It was a cage under a lamppost. Like outside.
Yep. Angry Bull Steakhouse was great. And I think the best part was the promoter turns to me and goes, "What gloves do you want to wear?"
Oh.
And I said, "You guys don't provide them?" He goes, no, what do you got?" And I basically just showed him my MMA grappling gloves. He said, "Okay, that's perfect. Use those."
Okay.
And that was the night. The medical person, I'm pretty sure was a veterinarian. I can't guarantee
that's
it.
That's hilarious.
It was an interesting way when he was doing medicals and checking your heart rate and all that fun stuff, your blood pressure.
I'm not neutered.
Right? Exactly. I remember I was very fortunate because my first MMA fight, the ref was a guy named Woody. He's very well known in the MMA world. And he was a friend of mine. He goes, I want to say the first 30 seconds after the fight started, all I heard him say was, "Breathe, Jason." And I realized I'd been holding my breath since he said fight. So, thankful he said that. I probably would have passed out myself.
Yeah. Wow.
But that was a wild fight. That fight I won by TKO in the first round. And I actually use that fight to teach my students because there's a part there where I get put into a headlock on the ground. And I execute the self-defense, the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu self-defense almost perfectly. As I roll him, I forget to base my hands out, which is very common because people go right into sport mode. And I got re-rolled back into the same position. Uh-huh. And you see me shake my head, and I do the same escape again, but this time you see my hands go out and base. Uh-huh. And I remember showing Master Hoyler that fight, I want to say 2 weeks later, because I wanted, before I got my black belt in jiu-jitsu, I wanted to make sure that I could step in the cage and fight. Everyone has to have their own reason why they get their black belt.
Sure.
Mine was, you know, I did the competition. I mean, by no means successful at competition.
Like for sports jiu-jitsu, you're saying?
I did the competition on the sports side. You know, it was awesome. I loved it, but I wanted to step in the cage and see.
It's a different thing. It's a different thing altogether.
You know, and so when I showed him that fight, he turns to me, and goes, "You mounted the guy for a long time. Why don't you just armbar him?" And I started laughing. I said, "Because I can armbar anybody in class. I'm not going to hurt them. But how many times in your life do you get to sit there and punch somebody in the face?"
That's true.
And it's mutually agreed upon.
I can't ground do that
in class.
Yeah.
Right. I can't do that in the class.
That's true.
So I have the opportunity to punch somebody in the face. I'm just going to keep punching them in the face.
Yeah.
So that was my first MMA fight.
Nice. So when did you meet Master Hoyler?
Ooh, I met Master Hoyler. I was a blue belt at the time. I believe we brought him out 2003, 2004. And he did a series of seminars in Newmarket, a no-gi seminar, a gi seminar, and it was packed. I want to say 80 to 90 people per seminar.
Sure.
Just a wild ride.
Wow. Okay. And then you kind of met him there, and then you kind of established a relationship with him?
Correct. Yeah. We every year he'd come out, I'd do a little bit more. We started getting close, becoming good friends. And then in 2013, when I opened up my own location, I went out to the association meeting. It was awesome. And then he asked me if I would start running the business part of the association meeting, where I'd come in on the last day and help the school owners grow their academies, talk about the culture we want for Gracie Maita.
Which you still do now. You still go down.
I still do it, yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You still going to the States. I know that. Yeah, I saw it on and Professor David Gonzalez. He came last year. He came down with you.
Correct.
This year he couldn't.
This year he can't because it's falling on a specific holiday.
But you're still running that kind of whole seminar I saw online.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. I actually do that a lot. I do a lot of business martial arts consulting. I do a lot of talks, keynote speaks. I don't run a consulting company. I've got a lot on my plate, but there's some great guys doing some great things in the space. This year in March, I'm going to be in the UK for Educational Funding Company as a keynote speaker. So they're bringing me out there for 2 days. A few years before that, I was in Australia. They were going to try and get me into Australia this year, but it's just my schedule just won't allow it.
Sure. It's a little bit of a drive, but it's a little bit of a hike to get there.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. But some amazing things being done. I mean, I firmly believe that every martial arts school owner should have some form of accountability when it comes to their business.
Sure.
Because it makes you do better as a school and as a martial artist and as a business owner.
Sure.
And always remember, you're a martial artist first, you're a business owner second. And if you have those two in mind, your businesses will flourish.
So I guess it's really good that I met you now, even though I don't have a school and I don't really have a business per se, but I do have a charity now. So that's a good thing. And I always appreciate the advice.
Absolutely.
From everybody, yeah, because I want to make it successful and I want to make the event, even though it's not all year round, but who knows where it's going to go in the future. We'll see.
I mean, I see big things for this.
I don't know. We'll see. Like, it started from nothing, so I don't know. And it's all fluke. It's all fluke. I read your book, by the way.
And?
I enjoyed the book.
That's awesome.
It's good because it's systematic, right? It's like, it's easy to follow. It's like, bang, bang, bang. It's like, gives you, like, the premise in every chapter. I like the way you organized it with the colors. I'm not familiar with the karate colors, but I mean, it's the same thing. It's like the same concept, right? And it's very, very easy to kind of like follow, like, okay, here's the life lesson. Here's the example. Here's the takeaway. Here's the recap. I like it.
Correct.
It's very, very straightforward, right?
It's been a really interesting book because I'm on the hook for 5 books right now. And that's the first one. And I did that one because I'd read an article about the things in war they never told you about. And I read this article. I said, there's so many life lessons here that aren't being explained.
Yes.
And I said, this can all translate to the martial arts world. And then I realized, like, how do we get the common person that doesn't do martial arts to understand how to have a martial arts mindset?
Sure.
And that was what propelled that book to start.
It's a Christian publisher, yeah?
Or is
it
not?
I think so. I was looking into, like, the publisher they used, and it was like, it looked like it was Christian-based.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Not like mine. You know what my publisher was? Self-publishing. But, yeah, no, like, the bunker is different. Obviously, like, it's very small. It's very, like, it's very local, but it's fun, I think. And
honestly, the second you have to go to work and you feel like it's work is the second you need to take a step back.
100%.
You know, a lot of friends of mine, they just ask, like, how do you juggle all these plates? Yeah. I go, they're not plates to me. They're just, they're already on the table. I'm just enjoying a meal now.
Yeah.
There's no juggling for me.
Well, I was coming up yesterday, so like for those who are listening, you know, I was up at your club last night at Gracie Humaita Bolton.
Yep.
And I said it right this time, Humaita, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Because you corrected me. Although I did see some people in the videos who train at your clubs.
Oh, I know.
Pronounce it wrong, so I didn't feel that bad. But I was coming up, I was driving up, I was talking to a friend of mine from the States. I was on the phone with her, and she's like, oh, you're so busy, you're doing the same thing. It's like, oh, you're balancing the church. The church is like this massive, it's like it's really big, the church that I'm at, and it's like all this stuff, and how do you have fine time? I'm like, well, it's not finding time. This is like the relaxation.
Yeah.
Oh, and in the church is not work either. It's like but it's a different thing. But like training is like, yeah, it's like you said, it's like it's enjoying a meal, it's enjoying, like, you know, fellowship with friends.
Correct.
So it's never it's not exhausting mentally. It's exhausting physically, especially with your guys who are younger and faster and
I know
more agile
I know.
Killed me. I couldn't sleep all night.
Thank God for TRT.
Well, I'm not on there yet, so maybe I need to start exploring these things.
Anybody because, interested in the TRT, we've got the nurse that does it.
Because I'm 44 now, and I'm feeling it. And
I'm going to plug my nurse on that one because first of all, she had her kids on my program, so she knows what we do.
Mm-hmm.
She understands what we do, and she makes sure she keeps us in the levels that keep us safe, but, you know, like we're like 21, 22 again.
Yeah, well.
That's important.
I got to talk to you about that because I like to feel like I was 22 again because I started jiu-jitsu late, dude. I started jiu-jitsu at 38 years old. And I'm like out of shape and it's not.
But you have to remember, like, I'm always sore. You're always sore.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is as you get older, you have two choices. You either sore from inactivity or sore from activity.
Yes.
you're either struggling to put your shoes on, regardless of your weight. You could be 150 pounds struggling to put your shoes on.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the flexibility, the core strength, or any of that stuff. Or you can be 100, or you can be 300 pounds and in shape, like, struggling to put like, your shoes on because your body's sore.
Yeah. Well, I'm 300 pounds and not in shape, but I'm in better shape than I was 6 years ago when I started. So that's
yeah, and a lot of people don't realize, like, if you're doing martial arts, you're in the top 10% of people working out. Like, if you're training twice a week, you've already beaten the top 10%.
Well, it was in your book, actually. You know, it's like, and the ones who go to black belt, like, less than 1%.
Correct.
Right? In jiu-jitsu, I think the attrition rate is, like, they were saying, like, 90% of everybody who step on the mats as a white belt don't make it to blue.
Correct.
And then from that 10%, the ones who go from blue to black is less than 1% sometimes.
So yeah, and it's very low. You know what I struggle with that? Jiu-jitsu used to have this gatekeeping thing that was like, you can't get a blue belt unless you're almost a purple belt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that attrition rate was high for that reason.
Yeah.
The problem is, if I take a 50-year-old man and I take a 25-year-old man, how do I hold them to the same standard?
Well, you don't.
You can't. And a lot of schools would just kill their students, and their students would quit and give up. I've had more people re-sign jiu-jitsu in their 40s and 50s, having done it in their 20s and saying that it was too hard, realizing that it's not too hard.
They got discouraged, though.
They got discouraged, and they had the wrong mentality, the wrong culture in the club for them. I'm never going to say any one school's got a bad culture. I'm just going to say it's a different culture.
Yes.
That isn't conducive to the mass. Then you have the flip side, right? You have those places that are like, well, you have enough time, you have enough classes, here's your blue belt.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, well, we have to find that balance. I think Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now has to find that balance, or else it's going to start turning into almost like one of the striking arts, where it's you pay your money, you do your time, and you get your belt. And that's a problem also.
I don't know if the problem is going to go away completely, because like you said, it's like, it is relative to a certain degree, like you said, like age and all that kind of stuff. And how do you even strike that balance? Like, how do you know as a professor, let me rephrase. It's like, you have to really know your students. You can't just like sit there like high level and say, okay, general criteria for everybody. You really have to know your 40 or your 50-year-old, for example, and what their progress is, which means you have to pay attention and get to know them and all that kind of stuff and track them, as opposed to your 20-year-olds or your 30-year-olds, right?
Correct.
Or else it's going to go one of the two extremes.
Exactly.
You're going to pass everybody, or you're not going to pass it. Like, it's going to be too hard for the older ones.
And I'll tell you right now, there's no right or wrong way. The way we do it is we always say stripes are given, belts are earned. Stripes are going to be given based on time and classes. The stripes is for the professors on the floor to see where you are in your training.
Yeah.
By the time you're at fourth stripe, then there's this criteria that each school is going to have that they want. Mm-hmm. I know for us, like, we have an actual test for blue belt.
Okay.
But the ultimate test is, if you're a four-stripe white belt and we have this guy come in that's never done jiu-jitsu before, and you roll with him and you keep yourself safe. You don't even have to submit him. You just have to keep yourself safe and out of danger.
Yeah.
If you're competent in that, in my opinion, a blue belt is someone that can defend themselves against the average person on the street. Mm-hmm. Now, if I put Big Shane, the gentleman you rolled with yesterday, when he was a white belt, he was mangling purple belts because he has a history of wrestling.
Yes.
He's 300 pounds. He benches cars like...
Oh, I know. He benched me.
Yeah.
So I know.
we have to treat it to the statistically significant, not the statistically insignificant.
Yeah.
And so that's all that blue belt is. Now, purple belt, we always call a fighting belt. The purple belt is where you take your techniques, you find the dozen techniques that you want to be really good at, and then you make it your fighting belt. Generally, I say a purple belt's ready to become a brown belt when the purple belt starts losing to other purple belts because they're trying out new things.
Yeah.
They're so bored of the same thing over and over again that they're like, I want to try something different. I want to do something different. And all of a sudden, they're starting to expand their world. Mm. Now they're ready for the brown belt, because the brown belt's kind of like, let me just try other things and get good at other things. And the reality is, it's so hard to be competent in all areas of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Well, you can't,
right? Like, we consider ourselves Gracie jiu-jitsu. We definitely try to explain the difference. The difference is real simple. Like, MMA is Gracie jiu-jitsu. Sports jiu-jitsu is Gracie jiu-jitsu. Self-defense jiu-jitsu is Gracie jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
But MMA on its own is not Gracie jiu-jitsu, right?
Yes.
And we try and keep that balance where they still have a healthy balance of all of the stuff that makes it still Gracie jiu-jitsu, which is, at the end of the day, unless you're going to pull out your gold medal and beat the crap out of somebody with it, you need to know how to defend yourself properly on the street.
Yeah. You need the self-defensive aspect of it.
Correct.
Which a lot of schools don't do anymore because they're going completely over to the sports side, which is, that's what you want to do.
Nothing wrong with it. Yeah. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. And I've had heated arguments and debates with people on it, because I try to tell them, you know, in my, and this is just opinion of one person. If you take a world champion black belt and stick him in the street, he's going to defend himself. No doubt about it.
Sure.
Will he come out a little more banged up and bruised? Maybe. You know, yeah. If he's never had a punch thrown in his life, he might come out more banged up and bruised than the brown belt that's not a world champion but has been dealing with strikes his whole life in a self-defense form.
Yes.
And then, you know, the old quote that I've always heard, which I love, is if you hit a black belt once, they become a brown belt. You hit them a second time, they become a purple belt. Three or four shots, they're a white belt again.
Yeah.
If they've never seen strikes before in their life.
Yeah.
You know? And then the argument is people will say, what about this person and that person? And it's like, okay, that's that person, this person, these world champions. Give me the top 10, 100 people that are black belts that have never competed, but they train sport. That is your testing base. That's the data that I want to see. Mm-hmm. Because if they are not great at sport jiu-jitsu, but all they learned is sport jiu-jitsu, if somebody puts on gloves and tries beating the crap out of them, how do they fare?
It does depend on what kind of game you play too, because not all games are the same in a real life scenario.
Correct.
Like if you're a spider guard kind of guy, I'm sorry, yeah. Like yeah. It's not going to help you in the you're not going to pull guard on a concrete floor,
yeah.
and look for sleeve grips, and you know, it's not going to happen. Like you might, but you're probably going to get destroyed.
My favorite
if thing that's all you play.
Agreed. But my favorite thing is when I'm talking to a black belt and they're like, jiu-jitsu is very hard. I go, it's actually very easy. What made jiu-jitsu hard was the second we took away punching and kicking. Because mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu was a very easy self-defense and martial art. Mm-hmm. We took away punches and kicks, and all of a sudden you can do a lot more things that you couldn't do. What made it even harder, once we took away punching and kicking, is then we added weight classes mm-hmm. and time limits.
Yeah.
That made jiu-jitsu a lot harder.
Because yeah.
And that's why I love sport, because it is a chess game. Like, it is so intricate. Mm-hmm. But if the base of your jiu-jitsu doesn't have some type of fighting self-defense aspect, you will always revert back to your original training. And yes. If I pull guard, for example, which I never do, sacrilegious, but I do with lower belts. If I pull guard, if I'm not going head and arm control right away, then if I get put on my back in the street and I'm not used to putting head and arm control so somebody can't punch me, I'm probably going to eat a punch before I realize to put them in head and arm. Does
yes.
that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I think that the basics, like, it also depends on the school that you kind of grew up in and did they teach basics? Because a lot of schools, they don't, like, so there's guys who go into their first class as a white belt and instead of learning, like, you know, the fundamental movements, I guess, of jiu-jitsu, right? It's like, oh, today we're doing worm guard. Today we're doing, like, squid guard. And they're starting there, and they don't know how to do a break fall. They don't know how to do a proper mount. They don't know, like, the most basic things, right? And if you don't have those, then you have big gaps in your game. So there's black belts. There's people who've gone up, let's say, through a sports jiu-jitsu. Like, I know guys who have gone up through, like, all the ranks. Like, I have a good friend. I'm not going to say who they are. Who have admitted he's a brown belt. And he's good, right? But, like, he's like, I have big gaps in my game because I just happen to be at schools that never taught this. So, like, I don't know, like, doesn't know how to escape from, like, a technical mount. Like, when he's underneath a technical mount, he just curls up like this, like a baby, and defends, but he doesn't know how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you don't know how to escape from that position? It's like, no.
And I think, like, that weird. Starts from right. the moment your students step on the mats.
Mm.
I can't, like, I don't call a warm-up in jiu-jitsu. I call it drill training.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if I say this is a warm-up, they don't pay attention to the difference between a shrimp, a hip escape, and a knee elbow escape.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go teach a seminar at friends' schools, and I say, guys, we're going to learn the six different ways to shrimp. And people are like, there's six different ways to shrimp? Yeah, because a shrimp is not a hip escape. A hip escape is not a shrimp.
Yeah.
And these have different applications for different things. And if you're not teaching your people that, it's very hard for them to apply it later on. How many times have you seen in a tournament? Someone's yelling at a coach or a professor's yelling on the mats, hip escape, shrimp, thinking it's the same thing. Well, the student doesn't realize, like, if you're in mount, mm-hmm. a shrimp is a totally different application than a hip escape. They're two different things.
Yeah.
You know, and it all depends on the person that's mounted you. And I remember, I'm not going to name names, but one of my close friends, when I was showing him my lesson plan or fundamental lesson plan, he goes, this is very boring. And I go, to you, it's boring.
It's effective.
It's boring to you because you're a black belt competing.
Yes.
You know, you're like, this is just UPA escape to the guard, past the guard to Americano. Like,
but it works.
I go, yeah, but like the white belt coming in on the street, what are you going to show him right off the bat? You know, if you start showing them the intricate stuff, I akin it to golf, even though I don't play golf. If you're showing them all the, you know, mini putt.
Yeah.
I call mini putt the sport jiu-jitsu. hit it through the windmill, go over the dragon's tail, all this stuff. You know what I mean? If you can't get your student to the green to even get to the putt, what are you giving them, right? And getting them to the green is the fundamentals, the basics, the stuff that gets you to be able to do all that crazy fun stuff.
The ultimate example is like, you know, the famous fight, you know, Harjit Gracie with Bushesha, right? You watch that fight, besides the fact that it's awesome, right? But it's like, you have Harjit Gracie, who quite rightly is considered probably the best of all time in the gi, right? Like, okay, I know people, it's controversial, people have, but it's like, what did he do in that fight, in that match? Nothing fancy.
Absolutely nothing fancy.
Right? It was just calculated, really flawless. I don't want to use the word basic jiu-jitsu because it makes it sound bad, right? Like, but it was fundamental jiu-jitsu. And Marcus Bushesha, who's considered, I guess, again, one of the best, right? Couldn't stop him. Mm-hmm. It almost looked like he was a baby. Like, he looked like a white belt fighting him, especially when he took his back. It was like, couldn't stop him, right?
Yeah.
And people, like, to the point where people thought, oh, you know, did he throw that fight out of respect? No, he just couldn't stop the guy.
No.
He was that good at just the fundamental, and he believes in that. He talks about it all the time. He's like, you don't need to do fancy things. You just need to be really, really good at, like, your fundamental Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
That's it. Especially because the reality is, if my house is built on stone, and your house is built on mud, but your house looks fancy and my house looks basic, I'm going to crush you.
That's right.
If you don't understand base, if you don't understand movement, if you don't understand timing, if you don't understand pressure, if you don't understand measurement, I tell all my students all the time, the technique doesn't change, the measurement changes. Mm-hmm. I can't change your measurement. So I will show you the technique, but you have to change the measurements on your body, because from my forearm, the length of my wrist to my elbow might be longer than yours, which means I can do this specific move this way, but we might have to tweak it because you have a shorter forearm.
Yes.
And people just don't understand, right? And the problem is, they get taught this and they're like, well, it just doesn't work for me. No, it does work for you. You just, you're not learning the measurement part of it. You're learning the technique part. So then you throw it out of the window. Mm-hmm. Or it's what's the instructor teaching for the month? It's whatever is being taught on whatever the IBJJF world champion is using at the time.
Or whatever they saw on the reels on Instagram, or
correct
whatever looks cool.
I love Instagram. I know.
No, it's cool. Yeah, there's a wealth, but I mean, it's almost too much though. Like, how much are you going? Like, there's a million techniques now, and it's awesome that jiu-jitsu is evolving in this way, and there's these different schools of thought and things like that. But I mean, you can't teach everything. You have to choose some kind of lane. Like, you have to, you know, like me, my size. Okay, obviously, maybe it's predictable. Like, I'm going to play half guard. I'm going to play deep half. That's what I play. It's not because it's easier. It does come easier to me, but I'm not going to be Baron Boloing. You guys were trying to teach Baron Boloing. You'll play. You're teaching it well. But I mean, like, my body type is not going to do that effectively in any kind of, forget about a street fight. Yeah. It's not going to work for me. And even in the sports jiu-jitsu thing. Right. So I'm going to gravitate towards the things that I can do really, really well and effectively. And I'm going to try to perfect them.
Absolutely. You know? And let's not forget where this came from. This came from UFC 1.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't come from Pan Am's one.
Yes.
Pan Am's one came from, you know what I mean? Like, that's the reality of it. So, and I think people forget this. I think they forget the pioneers of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu weren't just fighting in the kimono. They were fighting no-gi, uh-huh. And they were fighting MMA.
Yeah.
They were fighting three different venues of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Uh-huh. So, best grappler, hands down, no-gi, Gordon Ryan.
Sure.
Can you say he's the best gi grappler?
I don't know.
Can you say he's the best MMA fighter? No.
No. He's neither of those.
You could never call anybody the best in all three. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, the pioneers of what we do were fighting in all three. They were doing all three. They were doing no-gi, gi, and MMA, and putting them on the line of all three.
Yeah, like Master Hickson, perfect example.
Master right? Hickson. Henzo Gracie. I mean, look at Henzo. Look at Hoyler. Look at the whole family, right? Even Hodger Gracie fought MMA, no-gi, and gi.
Yeah. Although I think we can agree that he's the master of the gi. Like, as far as the gi is concerned, right? Like, that would be an interesting match, between maybe a Hodger Gracie and a Gordon Ryan. I'm just saying.
I mean, that'd be a wild match. I think.
Yeah. And I don't know who would win, because, yes,
one guy's younger. I'd like to see him in a gi and Gordon Ryan in a no-gi, and they fight together at the same time.
Yeah. Like, or two separate matches.
Yeah, one in gi, yeah, one no gi, yeah, and one with
but
both.
The same guys, and just see what happens.
Exactly.
And see what happens.
I mean, we used to do it all the time. We used to just, one guy would have gi on, one guy would be no gi. Like, to us, that was normal. Back in the day when we trained, if one guy said, I wanted to go no gi, no problem. I still kept my kimono on. Mm-hmm. Ezekiel will choke you. I don't care.
Sure.
I had to choose to take the gi off, you know.
And then you got Sambo, which has like, it's like both.
I hide my
legs. You're half wrestler, half gi. It's like.
I hide my legs from everybody. I'm just, I mean, look, if you sit there, if a black belt sits there and says they know it all, run away as fast as you can.
Sure.
No black belt knows it all.
100%.
You know, yeah. At the end of the day, class yesterday, I learned a tweak to the most basic back tape. Mm-hmm. And I'm still like, this is wild.
And you hadn't seen it before. You hadn't
been just hadn't seen it that way before. And I was like, this is wild. This is perfect. It's fundamentally sound. I'm stealing it.
Well, even Professor Dave, you know, like the other professor's name, the other black belt,
Jordan.
So Jordan was showing that escape from the escape from Omoplata.
Right.
And even Professor Dave, who's been doing it. Has he been doing longer than you? Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And it's like, he's the scene, and he's like, I never saw that escape before in my life.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And he's like, he's got to show it.
Be wary of the jiu-jitsu black belt that sees a technique and goes, I know it. And you never hear them sit there and say, I've never seen that before.
So skip ahead now to now. Like, we're in 2025. You own three gyms, you said?
I own three gyms. My gyms are Mississauga, Bolton, Tottenham. Mm-hmm. I work with the Alliston location as well.
Nice.
Pretty soon, my in Ontario's got 6 gyms. We've got 7 in Canada in total, and we're slowly expanding over time.
Nice.
But that's I do a multitude of things outside that are somewhat tied to martial arts, but not.
Mm. But you also have the Canadian Black Belt Academy,
correct?
Which is karate,
correct?
Right. But usually they're in the same location, right? They're,
right.
Is it the same? Is it like the same corporation that's sharing both, or is it two separate entities?
My Bolton and Tottenham, it's the same corporation for both.
Okay.
Licensing is different because Gracie Maitai, just like Gracie Ba, has got its own licensing.
Sure. So it's like having two dojos basically occupying the same physical space, I guess you could say.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, because they are very different. Although sometimes, do you have the same people who are training on both?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people cross-train. I find what lacks in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu space is the mindset part. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys will sit there and say, Jiu-Jitsu gives you these mindset qualities. And it's like, okay, great. How do you teach it on the floor? And they can't tell me that. They say, well, it just happens. It's like, no, it doesn't just happen. If you're not giving them a message at the beginning of class and at the end of the class, if you're not talking through how you relate the struggle you had getting out of mount to the struggle you might have paying your bills, you know, if you can't relate these things to your students, then you actually can't mesh the two together. You're asking them to figure it out on their own.
Sure.
And it's difficult. So I always implore instructors to find the mental connection to make martial arts exist outside of the house or outside of the dojo, where it affects their family and helps their family. You know, that fortitude you created on the mats, how do you translate it to your job, to your business, to your family, to your kids, to your wife?
Yeah, and that's more the classic martial art mindset, generally speaking, when you talk about martial arts. That's usually what they're known for. And jiu-jitsu is like, because it's more so laid back and it's so like kind of like, what's the word?
I mean, it's departed
from that because it's more like an evolution, right? So it's like more, it's not your classic martial art like Japanese jiu-jitsu was.
Right.
Right? Or judo is, for example. It's less rigid.
It is. But then how can you expect to have the same quality of person come out when you don't have the same rigidity that the other martial arts had? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm big on a uniform policy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it serves a school a wondrous thing. I know schools that are successful that don't have uniform policy.
Yes.
I know schools that hated uniform policies and now are the biggest schools on the planet and have uniform policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go on the floor and everybody is dressed the exact same,
sure,
that means we're in a class, we're here to learn, we're here. It sets the mindset. That
you join the army, you wear the same thing. You do the same thing, right? You join any other, you join a sports team.
And that's what I was just about to say.
Wears the same uniform.
You know what I love about sports teams is this. You can put on a Raptors jersey, but you're not a Raptors player.
Yes.
You can throw on my Gracie Humaita gi. Guess what? You're a Gracie Humaita practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. Person that walks on the floor, first day, nervous, doesn't know what to expect.
Oh, it makes them part of the team right away.
And all of a sudden, they're like, we say in the martial arts world, become, behave, believe, belong.
Okay.
You know? You have to become a martial artist. You have to put the uniform on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to behave one like one. Once you start to become like one and behave one, then you believe that you actually are part of the team.
Sure.
You behave, you become, belong, and then you're belonging to the team. You're actually part of the team.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have those things set up so that when a white belt walks in the school, you're setting them up for success. Become, behave, believe, belong. If they don't have those, if your program doesn't have those factors, you're keeping them from me 6 months to a year, and then that's it.
That's true. Yeah, because it's also like the idea of like not only being part of the team, but like the commitment and also the sacrifice that you make for your other team members as well. It's not just about you. It's not only – so I agree with you that in other – not in all the clubs, of course, it's a generalization. But, I mean, if the club is like too laid back, I guess you could say, then there is no camaraderie. There is no – it's like I come when I want. I leave when I want. Okay, fine. But, I mean, when it's time, though, to support each other, when it's time to go to competitions together, when it's time to, like, you know, help be a good training partner for the other person because you know they're preparing, for example, for a big competition, even mm-hmm. though you're not, right? You're gonna have that kind of sense of, you know, obligation to be there to help mm-hmm. your training partner, right? And if I'm not there, then I'm not helping them train. I'm not helping them prepare.
Correct.
Right? And so that's the downside of, like, being kind of like this more loose kind of atmosphere where it's always different people coming in, people leaving.
Definitely.
You don't have that consistency, right?
You don't have the consistency, and it's weird. I don't struggle, but like it's a weird balance because I'll give you a story. I was asked to do a consulting project in a school in the U.S., and I sat on their floor. I have this thing where I sit on your floor for 2 days, and I just take notes. Mm-hmm. And on the second day, an adult shows up 20 minutes late, mm-hmm. 50 push-ups, makes him do all these things. Mm-hmm. Another guy is wearing a pink belt because he forgot his belt. I pulled the instructor aside. I said, is that guy normally late? He goes, no. I go, if he was late for a bad reason, you made his day worse. Mm-hmm. Like, the reality is, first of all, the students are our bosses. If a student quits, they fire you as a boss.
Yeah, you just lost their membership.
Right. You didn't lose their membership. You got fired as an employee.
Yeah, sure. Like,
you no longer have this person in employment.
It's a reflection of you as the instructor, yeah.
And I know a guy who lost his father. And that night had to go to jiu-jitsu because he's like, this is the space to work this out, what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. Showed up 5 minutes late. The coach paraded in front of everybody, quit that night.
Sure.
Because you decided that as an instructor, you had to prove a point when that guy's best part of his day was going to be your class.
Yeah.
And you just ruined it. That guy never did jiu-jitsu for another 10 years. Yes. And he goes, I thought they were all the same. All the schools were the same. And that's my problem with people teaching bad jiu-jitsu. And when I say bad jiu-jitsu, I don't mean the moves. I mean the class culture. And yeah. the culture. Because yeah. One of my buddies who does consulting goes, you give a lot of stuff away for free. I go, yeah, because I can't risk the school next to me doing such a bad job that they lose students for life. Mm-hmm. You know, in my world, if every martial arts school in my town was in the same plaza, it would make their decision easier. Parent could walk into each one, not waste gas money, and see where the best option. Mm-hmm. You know, but now these schools do such a bad job of servicing their students that you lose a martial artist for life, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, because maybe there's nothing else nearby, and they're like, well, that's the convenience of me being close by. Like, fewer are the people who love it so much that they're going to leave one place and they're going to go drive an hour or 45 minutes.
I have those. I have people
who are
past
three
exist. Or four schools. But here's the reality. I'm not saying my school is the best. What I'm saying is my goal is to make my school better than the rest.
Of course.
How do I do that? And there's all these little things that drive, you know, like it's a weird culture, right? I don't like getting whipped by belts. If someone gets a belt, I don't like the whole belt.
Oh, yeah, but that is going the way of the dodo, I think, as well. Like here in North America, I can't remember last time I went to a club that they actually still do that anymore.
If somebody requests it, maybe I can get it. But I've watched people quit jiu-jitsu because they were getting to blue belt and they just didn't want to get whipped. And then I watched people berate that person saying, oh, they're a wimp, they're a wuss. It's like, mm-hmm. why? Because they don't want to get strapped by a piece of cloth.
Yeah.
But their jiu-jitsu solid and fat, like,
sure.
Well, it speaks to their mentality. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It speaks to the fact that they don't want to get, you know, whipped. Like, I've never been whipped by a belt.
Yeah.
No one's ever been whipped by a belt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't, like, mind you, I'm new to it, I guess you could say. Like, I've been doing it 6 years, not that long compared to other people. But I mean, it's not a lot of schools are doing it anymore.
No, and again, the schools that do it, they probably are doing it in a way that, you know, it's an option.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, if it's a rite of passage and it has to happen, you're beating the crap out of someone.
Yeah.
I think I see the novelty behind it. I understand it's cool.
For some people.
I think you lose a lot of your future. I mean, no one comes into your school a world champion.
Yeah.
You got to teach to them. And if you think it's going to take a year and a half to teach them, good luck. No one ever has the perfect mindset. Like, we're always striving, but there's no such thing as 100%. So your goal is to always make your student better than they were when they walked in. Mm-hmm. If you can't fulfill that in a class, you're disservicing your students.
Sure. I would agree with that. What's your thought on, like, competition as, like, of course, it's a part of jiu-jitsu, right? But and you're not always, and a very small percentage of people actually compete who do jiu-jitsu. Like within the all the people doing jiu-jitsu in the world, what is it like? It's like what 5% compete, if that, know. Right? But I mean, do you think it's like one of those essential things that even if you don't compete often, you should at least do it once or twice in your life as part of the journey, or do you think it's not important?
I believe you should.
Yeah,
I believe, and whether you do it in a club level setting or a bigger scale, I think it's very important. Do I think you can't get a black belt without competing? No. Uh-huh. Might take you longer. You know, there's black belts that are recreational. There's black belts that are MMA fighters. There's black belts that are world champions.
I'm not saying world champion, though, but so the question that I have, right, is like, okay, I'm an older guy. I started at 38 years old. I'm not going to be a world, like, I'm not going to be a world champion. Maybe, but I don't think so, right? At least in my age group, yeah, and all that kind of stuff, right? I'm going to try because I always compete and I try to do the best I can. But I mean,
I understand. Like, I agree.
Can you be a real martial artist when it gets to the level of black belt? It's different when you're lower belts, right. I think, right? But it starts there because you have to be you build up, right?
There you go.
Can you be like? So the question I have, and I don't want to insult people who are going to be listening to this, or people going to not like what I'm going to say right now. But I mean, I agree that not everybody has to compete. I agree that some people are just interested in it as a hobby. That's totally fine, right? But it's like if you're going to get to the level of black belt, and let's say you're going to be teaching people, or you know, some people they're doing seminars or they're doing, you know, like they're whatever, right? Like, I don't know. The competition is where you really see if your jiu-jitsu works, because when you're in the club, right, you get to know your friends, you get to know your sparring partners, mm-hmm. You know their game, right? It doesn't get stale, but you know it becomes predictable. Right, it's impossible not to, right? So then it's not the same, and you really don't know. Like that's why I always cross trained, right? Like I know some people don't like the cross training and things like that, right? But I always cross trained from the very beginning. Why? Because every time I would go to a different club, I would get my butt kicked, mm-hmm. right? And that was good for me because I'm like, oh my goodness, like I thought I was good because I was training with all my friends, and I could beat my friends, but now I go over here. And these guys are playing a completely different game, and my jiu-jitsu is not that great. There's mm-hmm. big holes in it, and I wouldn't know that if I didn't go to train with other people, right? And then when I go to the competition and I really don't do well, let's say, or I do well, then I know like where am I on like my trajectory of like what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So it's the ultimate test when you're fighting people that you don't know who they are,
mm-hmm.
and it is terrifying. Like and it's like some people handle the stress different than others, right? But it's terrifying because you don't know who's going to step on the mat ahead of you. You don't know what game they've been working on. Could be something you've never even seen before,
mm-hmm.
right? So I don't know if you're going to be like a really confident.
I think it's a loaded question because I'm going to give you the political answer. My question to you is first, what is your jiu-jitsu black belt mean to you? So
yeah,
what do you think a jiu-jitsu black belt should be able to do?
I don't know. That's a loaded question too.
Exactly.
I'll answer it. I don't care. It's my podcast. I can say it. I don't give a crap. I'm a purple belt. What do I know, right? But I mean,
and who are we to say,
yeah,
what a jiu-jitsu black belt should be?
But I'll tell you what I like from my professors.
Exactly.
Right. What I respect. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the same answer, right? I respect when a black belt is humble. I respect when a black belt knows that they don't know everything, like you said before. But I also respect though that the things that they do know, they've tested it.
Correct.
They've tested it.
Correct.
And they're going to be like, they're going to be at least experts in the things they know.
Correct.
Right. And I don't know if it, like, I don't know. I could be wrong, but I mean, like, I don't know if a hobbyist who's never tested that really on, not on the world stage, but I mean, in any, even a local competition, if you've never tested your jiu-jitsu and your game, right, against multiple different opponents, right, to see if the stuff that you know, do you know it well? That's the only test,
exactly.
Right? You can teach it, like you can be a great teacher, and you can like memorize the way to break down a move, but can you actually perform it like when it counts? That I respect.
Agreed. But the question is, at what point does it become unrealistic? If I take an 80-year-old black belt that's been a black belt for 40 years. At some point, he is not going to be able to do the techniques, even though
sure.
how good he you.
That's an extreme. Gave him
right. That's
so extreme. Let's say the general black belt was teaching.
My opinion is, as long as the black belt can defend himself against the average person,
yeah,
It's a, if they're recreational, that's what they need to be able to do. It's a martial art. It's a self-defense.
Yeah. You know? I guess it also depends if they're teaching or not as well.
Correct.
Because not all black belts are professors.
Well, I mean, in this world now, they just hand professor bars out to everybody that's been training for a year.
I disagree with that, right? Like, I think there's a reason why it's called professor's bars.
Right.
Right? Like, my good friend, Father Thomas, who I used to have the Fighting Priest podcast, mm-hmm. who's another priest, who's a black belt under Professor George Abrito, right? He's up in Calgary now. Like, he's a second, he just got a second degree now, but he doesn't have professor bars. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, no, I don't teach.
Yeah.
I just go, I train. Sometimes if I can help out the professor, the instructor of the gym, I will help out. But I don't teach a class. Mm-hmm. I'm not a professor. So why would I put them on? Although he knows his stuff and he's really, really good. But he's like, no, that's not my vocation. That's not my role within the dojo.
And that's right? What I get back at. What does your black belt mean to you?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I judge nobody that has a black belt. Somebody gave it to them for a reason, unless they gave it to themselves. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you have to prove your own belt around your waist.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You're kidding me to sit there and say, like, a purple belt is just as good as a black belt. Just means the black belt's put more time in it. Like, yeah. I know purple belts that will destroy 90% of the black belts out there.
Yes, there are those.
You're going to tell me those black belts only, black belts are young guys, good guys. You tell me that they're not black belts anymore? No. That's why I really liked Master Elio Gracie had a mentality portion to the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu system.
Like, yes.
You had to have specific
characteristic
development traits that made you a professor,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's something that is martial arts. The only thing that's not regulated properly in the world, like unless you're in Japan, I would imagine, but in Canada, mm-hmm. there's no regulatory body. We tried to start it 7 years ago, and do you want to
all martial arts or like
I tried to? We tried to start them through the government funding. We tried to do it so that we would have a regulatory body for all martial arts. Do you want to know the reason why a lot of clubs wouldn't sign on? Is because they did not want to get the vulnerable sector check or the criminal background check.
Really?
That was their hang-up.
Really?
Wow. And it lets you know some of the world we live in with some of the people we live in.
That's interesting.
There's in Australia, they've got something called the original... a lot of guys will know it on the podcast. It's called MIA, Martial Arts Industry Association.
Mm.
In U.S., it's a it's like a consulting company, but in Australia, it's an actual regulatory body that the government recognizes as a regulation for martial arts schools.
So you can't have one unless you meet the criteria.
You could have one, but it wouldn't be recognized through the government.
Okay.
Okay. From what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me the rights to move it here and do it in Canada because we have the same, almost the same government structure set up. And as I was starting to build it out, I was asking these guys, hey, it's real simple, blah, blah, blah. Criminal involvement sector check is all you need. And a lot of guys are like, for who? And I said, anybody that's teaching for you.
Anybody. That's standard in most fields. Like,
right?
Standard for me as a priest. Like, it's
exactly.
You're dealing with any children, any elder, anybody really. Like, you're, who's in the vulnerable, you have to have it.
Yeah, and it's a non-for-profit, so you're not, it's not like it's costing you money.
And but it doesn't cost a lot of money.
Exactly.
It doesn't cost a lot of money. Like, a criminal background check is like, $25, man.
Yeah.
And a vulnerable is like $50. It's not a lot of money. It's not going to break the bank, right? It's not even a hassle. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you do it online now. Like, it's not.
All my instructors, criminal background check, vulnerable sector check.
Yeah.
All of them first aid, CPR.
Yeah.
All of them have gone through my harassment policy protocols.
Yeah.
All of them, like, all, the student is the most important person on the map, not the instructor.
You know? But I thought that would have been like, even if it's not like, if there's not a regulatory board, at least for martial arts, I would have thought, like, even legally, like, even from, like, an insurance point of view in Canada, this would be have to be, like, mandatory or you can't get insured. Like, you would think something like...
A lot of martial arts school owners have personal insurance, don't have proper business insurance for the martial arts school.
Yeah,
you're looking at somebody that's been in the martial arts consulting space since I was in there since... When I was 18, I was doing private consulting for a large organization in the States. And then when I was 21, 22, I was doing little talks and summits and all that. And I've gotten to really understand the martial arts community in Canada. And a lot of them don't hold proper insurance.
Mm.
They hold improper liability. There's no background checks, no nothing. And that's just, a problem. And which is, listen, if you want to run your school like that, there's no one to say, mm-hmm. boo. If something goes on in your academy that is negative or bad and puts a black mark on the industry, 100% that's your fault.
100%.
That's all there is to it.
You can be liable. You are liable.
You could also have all of those things and then turn a blind eye to something going on in the academy.
Correct. But it's better to have them.
It's better to have them.
It's bad. It's more filters, right? There are more stages to, you know, to get through, like, anything. Like, you got to go teach in a school. You got to do those things, right? You got to, even if you're just a guest somewhere. You have to have it. You work Absolutely. In a senior's home, you got to do it. You got to everywhere. Like, it's just, you know, I teach students, like I teach at our local seminary. We have where we train priests, like the young guys, right? Yep. Maybe priests, right? And it's like, I do practice them with them. So like, I was taking them to the seniors' homes and hospitals and things like that to do on-site, right? It's like, they can't even get in the door and interact with people if they don't get background checks.
Correct.
Especially now, it's extremely strict, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't even, like, sometimes you can't even go in as visitors, like, if you're interacting, right? So why is it any different when you're dealing with little kids? And forget about little kids, anybody, really.
Anybody.
With jiu-jitsu, it's such an intimate thing.
I know.
Right?
It is.
It's even more intimate in the sense that the nature of the rolling than taekwondo is, than karate is, and all those other things, which, of course, all those should have it as well.
Agreed, 1,000%. Yeah. And, like, on a PSA level, wear a rash guard under your gi, man. I don't want your hamburger meat on my face when we're rolling.
Well,
in competition, it's different.
Well, in competition, we have no choice. I wish we could wear rash guards in competitions, but
I have people travel to my gym all the time to take class, and I'm like, here, put a rash guard on. They're like, why do I have to wear a rash guard? It's like, dude,
people don't want that.
Put a rash guard on.
Yeah, you got to think about...
We're not competing. We're having fun. We're enjoying a class, you know.
But even in competition, like, who cares? Like, really? What's it going to do in the competition? Nothing. Yeah. Right? Women, of course, wear rash guards because they're women, right? And they allow that in competition. What would be the damage of allowing men to do it? Like, even in IBJJF, I know it's controversial. Oh, it's like, there are rules. The rules are the rules, of course, right? But, I mean, what is the – it doesn't take away from the sport. It's not dangerous.
I mean, maybe a little more dangerous. Your foot can get caught into, like, I don't know.
On a skin tight rash guard, really?
I don't know.
Your foot's going to get caught more so than it's going to get caught in the actual gi.
Yeah.
Or exactly. in the belt or somewhere else that's actually much bigger.
Because then the argument would be in no gi, you're just wearing shorts.
Well, but in no gi, you wear rash guards.
Exactly.
So it doesn't make any sense to me.
So.
All right. And we're talking about a piece of garment that is, again, skin tight and is covered by another uniform.
Exactly.
So it's not even like a hazard of like getting a finger caught or something. It doesn't make any sense, but it is what it is. And it's not for us to change it. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think rash guard should be like standard, across the board.
Yeah. It blows my mind how many guys freak out about people not wearing, sandals to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yet don't.
Which is also gross.
But don't tell their students to change your underwear before you do jiu-jitsu.
Or take a shower. Or come clean.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's like, you're not telling them to do this because they've been in those underwear all day and now they're going to sweat in it?
Yeah, I know. I'm old enough now that I don't really even care like about being nice. Like if there's somebody who's not hygienically clean, I'm like, I'm not rolling with you. Why? Because you smell, buddy. I love you, but you smell.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to deal with that right now.
There's a match... one of the pioneers of jiu-jitsu here in Canada, Mark Bocek, had a tournament one year, and I was first in no-gi, and in the second match before the finals, I have a video of it. My hand is pushing the guy's face away the whole time. And one of the guys, it was a small circuit back then. One guy's come through and goes, man, your wrestling's really good. You push the head away, you keep him away. And I go, that's wrestling? He goes, yeah, why were you doing that? And I said, because his breath stunk. It was so bad that I was just pushing his head away the whole time because I was going to puke on the mats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's worse. There are worse things, too. But, you know, again, thankfully, like, I don't know, like, most people are pretty good these days, I find. You're going to get, like, some – it's not as prevalent as it used to be. I don't know what you experience. But, like, most clubs I go to, people are really respectful. And thank God they're
– jiu-jitsu clubs have come a long way.
They've come a long way, yeah. In the day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
like let's you know, back in the day, there was still challenge matches going on. I witnessed a few with the old school gyms.
Yeah,
you know, karate guys coming in, kung fu guys coming in, Twin Dragons guys coming in wanting to fight. So, as a kid growing up in that jiu-jitsu world, it was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I watched a guy leg kick and break a guy's leg, and then we had to drive him to the hospital. That's awesome.
You know? You can't do that anymore, though.
Definitely can't.
You can't do that anymore.
Definitely can't.
Nice. Well, we are coming up. Well, let's see. We're coming up to an hour, dude. But a little bit about the bunker, since it's a bunker podcast. I'm appreciative of your support. Number one, mm-hmm. The whole Gracie Humaita team, because, like, you know, the bunker's only been around for 4 years now. Like, we've done four tournaments, I guess you could say. We've done three actual tournaments. The first one, the fourth one, was in the bunker. It was like a joke before we went to the new location. But as far as the actual charity thing, we've done three of them now. This year now, we're in 2026. We're going to come up to the fourth one. You guys came in 2 years. So the last two you've been there.
Correct.
Really appreciative of the support. of bringing your guys. You guys are really awesome, respectful, and like, and also I want to mention, because we were talking about before about like, you know, fundamental jujitsu and consistency and things like that. And you can even see that, like, even in your competitors who come, right? I'm not just trying to be nice and blow smoke up your butt, mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. But, like, you know, you can even see it. Like, you can see them, like, the Short brothers who were, like, you know, Dominic and Devin, right? Like, you know, they came in, did very, very well both years, right? You know, Devin taking the championship this year, right? And it's like, you can see, it's like fundamental jujitsu. They play their game. They're consistent. If you watch their matches, it's like they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they're doing it like calculated.
Yeah.
Right. Which means that they train consistently. They train the same thing. And they are, the word is consistent, like, which means they become proficient.
Correct.
In the same moves over and over again. And they do it just so well that it's like, well, it's the same game. Yeah. Is it diverse? Are you seeing new things in every role? No. But you're seeing like really good jujitsu cutting all the way through, all the way to the top.
Yeah.
Right? Which is cool to see. Because a lot of guys, you see them, especially a blue belt.
Yeah.
It's a blue belt tournament, right? So blue belt is fun because they're not like, you know, the high level of brown and black, you know what I mean? But they're not whites.
Yeah.
Trying to kill each other. It's that middle place where it's like,
yep,
they're finding themselves and they're, you know.
What's very important for me to acknowledge is my jiu-jitsu academies would not be where they were if it wasn't for guys like Dave Gonzalez, who put so much time and energy into teaching classes, often for free for me when we were going through our little spat. Not me and him. Another person who shall not be named, but if you ever want to do some Googling, just search Robinson's Karate Schools.
Okay.
We wouldn't be where we are as a team if I didn't have guys like Dave Gonzalez and, to an extension, another gentleman, Andrew Powley, who's a black belt. Those guys have been instrumental in the building of our academies and taking them to the next level. I mean, Dave is like the general of all my academies.
Yeah,
I don't even question when he says we're doing this, we're doing that. You know, I give little advice with little things, but the passion he has for teaching class and the passion he has when teaching class and the passion he has for everybody on the floor. Look, I've been to schools where I can tell you who the popular kids are in the class. And by kids, I mean adults too.
Sure.
And who the not popular people are. You come to my school when Dave is teaching the class, everybody is equally important to him. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge thing.
So, well, like, he's a real martial artist.
He's a martial artist, right? You know, and
he lives it.
Shout out to the guys who have a black belt in another style and then did jiu-jitsu, because they tend to do a little bit, have an easier transition to teaching than the guys that learn solely just from one style.
Yeah.
You know? But I have to acknowledge those guys, because to sit here and try and trick the guys that competed at your bunker tournament, I mean, that was all a combination of Dave Gonzalez and Andrew Powley and Jordan Schultz, like my mm-hmm. my black belts that are teaching right now.
Yeah, but they're just, it's just the nice guys too, right? Like, it's like the bunker, I always say it's like the bunker's almost like Switzerland, right? It's the neutral,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's for everybody, right? Like, I don't take, like, there's no preference. Like, try to bring everybody together, which is difficult sometimes, right? Because you have, you know, you have the politics, you have clubs that don't talk to each other, things like that, right? And it's like, for me, I don't care, because like I said, I always cross trained. I never like sat in my own place and said, I'm over here, whatever. So I made relationships with everybody. And then when we started the bunker thing, even when it was like just a private little bunker group, it wasn't even a competition yet. It was different guys coming.
Yep.
And all it was just pure. It was just like, let's get together and let's just roll, listen to some music, have a good time. Right. And enjoy each other's company. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. And so now it's just on a bigger scale. So I appreciate it, because even like, I want to bring more people in. Like, this year, how many dojos do we have? We have like 10 different dojos.
That's wild.
On some level, participating, right? Amongst the males and the females, right? Which is really, really beautiful. And some of them, I didn't even know them. Like, I hadn't even met their professors. But like, thank God, they were all chill and cool and everything like that, right? But you have to be careful sometimes, because yeah, if you don't know the people and then you're bringing them into like the mm-hmm. the event, you don't want to have any negative issues. You don't want to have like overly aggressive people coming in. You don't want, because it does happen, right? But generally speaking, like, yeah, the Gracie guys are really, really great, and they've been like, you know, you guys have all been like very, very supportive. So I mean,
you can be that. Overly aggressive and respectful still.
Yes, but you know what I mean. I mean, like,
what you're getting at.
You're going, yeah. If you're going into like a charity tournament and if you're screaming and getting angry,
yeah,
if that's... somebody loses, we don't have that. Thank God we haven't had any of that. But I mean, I don't want to have that in the future, right? And so you
or
have
else
to
that
be
jerk something. In the Hummer is going to pull it out. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? So you want to keep it like, you know, light and everything like that. But it is a competition, so it's going to, you know, you're going to have that. But I don't know, like, so I'm hoping, like, in the future it's going to grow. Like, again, it's going to stay the same size as far as the competitors. Like, I don't want to go beyond the 16 males because mm-hmm. I think it's a good number, right? It's manageable within one night. And maybe, like, 8 females is good. That was a good number this year. Yep. Last year we had 4, and then this year we just had whatever. We had 8. I think that's a good number, right? If we went a little more with the girls. But if you go higher, then you have to go up to the 16.
I would leave it exactly. The only thing I would consider is Bunker Jiu-Jitsu is off that military thing, right? It would be really cool is to do, like, Bunker Jiu-Jitsu DEFCON blue and then Bunker Jiu-Jitsu DEFCON purple.
See, people have asked me this, right?
You know what I mean?
Can we add...
But on another night, right? Another night.
Yeah. So
September is purple, June is brown.
Later so I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this, and maybe in the future we will, but I don't want to go too fast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you have something good and it's, like, special and there's, like, uniqueness to it, because I think it is unique,
that is
right, in the city, I don't want to, like, push it hard and then it becomes too much, too fast, and then you lose that, mm-hmm. right? Like, even now, I'm always scared, I ask for a lot of opinions from different black belts and things like that. Like, what should I do? How do we make it better, but not too big, not too fast, things like that? Because, yeah, like, we were thinking about that even last year. Like, you know, a lot of purple belts want to do it. Yeah, okay, let's add another one this summer. And then other people would be like, well, what about brown belts? What about black belts and things like that, right? And it's like,
I would leave black belts out.
For now,
belts
it's too out. Much. It's too much.
Leave those two colors out.
Yeah.
Stick with blue and just make it
for blue. Now it's going to stay. Yeah, so like this year, 2026 will be blue again.
Yeah.
We'll just stick it. I like the super fights. It broke it up a bit.
That was neat.
It was just fun.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
Those if guys you ever great. Do slap fighting super fights where we're allowed to open hand strike.
That'd be hilarious.
I would love to jump in on that.
Somebody was like, can I bring some Muay Thai guys? I'm like, okay, good. Slow down, guys. Okay. Like, slow down, guys. I don't want blood on the mats. Like, I don't want, like, okay. It's like, cause somebody was telling me, I know the Muay Thai guys. Let's bring them in for some. I'm like, okay, it's a different thing, guys. Let's just keep it jujitsu. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, like, I think we'll do the same thing. Maybe we'll get different super fights. Like, it'd be nice to get some more black belt super fights. Cause it's nice to see that contrast. You know, you see the main
as
thing.
As long as they're fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the whole point. Like, it's
I can't
just
stand watching black. I think it goes back to, like, college basketball versus NBA basketball. Like, apparently college games. I'm not a sports guy, by the way. For anybody listening, I don't know the difference between NFL, NHL, and OHL. I don't know. But, like, the blue belts competing, like, there's a great nervous energy about them. That
yes.
is awesome. You get two black belts, if they're just sitting there for 6 minutes trying to do one thing.
They both sit down.
Yeah.
And they're trying to leg lock each other for 5 minutes.
No knock on it, you know what I mean? But it's like, let's make it submission only. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's why we're trying to, I think that's what we're going to do. Like, this is the first time we tried it. I think they were fun, the two fights.
They're great.
Yeah, they were fun. They were, you know, they were fun because the personalities, too, that we chose were like, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm asking specific people who are going to be, yeah, they're going to give a good show, and they understand that it's a charity. They understand that it's entertainment. They're not in it, you know, the super fight guys, they're not in it for anything except to help, right? So it was really nice of them to do it. So we'll stick with that, I think. And I like the blue. Yeah, I agree with you. And I was really impressed with the female fights.
Honestly?
Right?
They were great. And shout out to Laura, the girl that represented.
She was good, man.
She had gotten her blue belt.
The plumber.
She got her blue belt, I want to say, 2 weeks prior, weeks prior.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hard-working female.
Yeah.
Great woman. Great practitioner.
Yeah.
Loves the sport. She's going to go very far with that.
Yeah. She
and
was
the short
she was
boys
really
also.
But the girls, I don't know, it seemed like they had, maybe they felt they had something more to prove, but they were more intense.
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, the guys were good too, don't get me wrong. But the girls were like, everyone told me, it's like, female match is really, really good. Like, yeah. It's like, and I'm like, yeah, it was really technical, really good, a lot of energy. And that's why the blue belt, people tell me, like, why'd you pick blue belt? I'm like, because it's kind of like, it's that time where they have a lot of energy and just, I don't know, it's fun to watch them.
For sure.
Right? But then you have that contrast, right? So it's nice to see the super fights where you have more seasoned practitioners who are more technical, who, you know, are more seasoned, right? And they can see that contrast, which is also nice because, like, okay, well, you know, if you see really, really good black belt fights or brown belt fights and you're like, well, I want to be there.
Yeah.
That's what I want to aspire to, right? So, we'll keep that. But I think this year, a lot of people, we mentioned it earlier, but, like, we were finally incorporated, which is great. Mm-hmm. So we incorporated as not-for-profit, like, this past month for the Bunker, and we called it the Bunker Community Fund because you have to change the name a bit when you do a non-profit. And it's going to be specifically, like, you know, to be able to bring in more donations, like, more, like, bigger donations, I guess, you know, because, you know how it is. It's like, no corporations or no companies are going to give you bigger amounts of money if they're not getting a tax receipt. It's just the reality of the world we live in.
It is.
Like, God bless you guys and NKS and JT6 for, like, you know,
but help things me out. Like this, for us to support guys like you and charities and do work outside, gives us, I teach one of my seminars in business on it, our social license. We need a social license to operate in the community. Mm-hmm. If we're not giving back, we lose that social license.
Yeah, I agree with you. I appreciate though, because still people will not give. Yeah. People might give you like $100 or something, right? But they're not going to give you $5,000.
Yeah.
They're not going to give you like bigger stuff. And I understand, because they have obligations and they have tax write-offs and all these kind of things that companies have to think about, right? And so that's why we're incorporating, because we just want to make it easier for people to give,
right?
And to like make it more of a, you know, we want it to be an event that's going to be every year consistently. Everyone knows it's happening at Christmas, like around Christmas time, holiday season. We can count on people's donations, and they always know it's going to go to both local charities and also to support the athletes, because we haven't been able to support the athletes up to now. It's been completely like, the athletes are coming, they're helping out, they're getting a free gi, big deal. Like, it's and not, it is a big deal in the sense that we appreciate Ikiro and Flawless. It's not a little thing that they're donating, right? But I think something more substantial, because, you know, it's like, what do jiu-jitsu athletes get in Canada? Nothing. We pay money out of our pockets to go compete,
yeah,
right? Which is fine, but I mean, you put in all this effort. A lot of jiu-jitsu guys, they're not rich. They're, you know, jiu-jitsu is expensive compared to a lot of other martial art or other sports, right? And, you know, for some of these guys, they're struggling. They're trying to be, some of them want to be like, you know, professional athletes. You know, it'd be nice to be able to give something back to them that could cover their tuition for a year, you know, at whatever club they're at, whatever, something, right? Yep. Even, it's like, it doesn't have to be a ton of money, but I mean, it'd be nice. You can win a couple of $1,000 doing a small charity competition, right? And also helping other people. So that's where we're taking it. And that's so we'll be doing more announcements, because I haven't really announced it, you know, publicly at all, but we will be doing some open mats.
Okay.
Coming up. We have two already scheduled. I'm not going to release the dates yet. And maybe more. And basically the way it's going to be is we're going to be doing open mats in the summer and the fall leading up to the event. It will build hype, hopefully. All the people who like to come to the bunker can come to the open mats.
Yep.
It'll be like $20 for the open mat, right? Because we do open mats for charities all the time, mm-hmm. right? And this will be specifically for the Bunker Community Fund, which means that all the money goes towards like the pot. So it's like crowdfunding,
yep.
right? For the purse, right? Which I think everybody can get behind, because you know, who doesn't want to support? First of all, they're supporting themselves, selfishly speaking, because they're like, well, the more people we get out to these things, the more chance I have of winning, mm-hmm. and it helps me out, but it also helps charities, right? So the way we're going to take it is that I want to get everything donated. So obviously venues, all that kind of stuff will be donated, hopefully, right? Because I don't have the money for that stuff, right? And then basically anything above that, because obviously I don't get paid for any of this, and none of our volunteers do, it will be like half will go to charity, whatever charity we're going to be helping out, and then half of it will be split between the males and the females.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that'll be nice. And the more people we get, the higher the, I don't want to say jackpot, but I mean,
big things on the horizon. That's
for yeah, sure. Yeah. And I think it'll be good. And yeah, I appreciate your support.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And thank you for your time. I know we're way past time. That's and, okay. But thank you for sitting down with me. I know you're busy.
Yep.
And,
anybody wants to get a hold of me, Instagram's mrjason.ca.
Yes. Yes. Just
shoot me a message if you like what you heard, or you have questions, yep. or you hated what I said and you just wanted to speak your mind, go right ahead and
come visit Gracie Humaita Bolton or Tottenham or Woodbridge,
Mississauga, or Woodbridge,
or Barrie. Yeah, it's like one big giant family.
We all know each other. With each other.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's one big family, and
come out and visit them. They have good people, and they have good roles and good instruction, and it's always fun, and they always welcome guests. Yeah, so
absolutely. Yeah, just let us know you're coming. You show up with your purple belt over your shoulder saying, "I want to fight."
Yeah, they'll do that.
No,
no. Respectfully.
Bring a mouth guard and gloves at that point.
Don't bring a black gi. Don't bring a black gi, guys. Bring a white gi, Gracie Humaita. Or blue. Yeah?
You allow white or blue.
White or blue. The classic colors, right? Don't bring a black, which is like my whole wardrobe. I have like two white and like one blue. And then Professor Dave's like, make sure you bring one of those. I'm like, okay, no problem. White is not slimming. It's not slimming.
It's not. But, you know, at the end of the day.
I feel like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man when I wear the white gi.
Yeah, but I've had arguments about that with people. Well, what's the difference? Listen, if a black key makes your jiu-jitsu better, then you got to look at your jiu-jitsu.
No, it doesn't. Has nothing to do with my jiu-jitsu. It has to do with my self-esteem.
I know. No. Listen, I love my karate uniform is black. I love black.
Yeah, it does hide stains.
Yeah.
White gets dirty.
Yeah, oh, so yeah. That's the, well, and that's a good thing, too, because I can sit there and say, hey, man, your gi is dirty.
That's also true.
go get a new gi.
Take care of it.
Here's a gi to wear today. Wash this gi.
100%. Nice. Well, thank you, Professor. I really appreciate your time. And we'll be seeing you on the mats.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiujitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.